This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always on Mondays by Adam Burke. We are in the thick of it for the college football transfer portal, which we will not really dive into right now because this is a betting podcast. We've got one game left, Indiana, Miami, and entering this year, Adam, you think back to the preseason projections, preseason polls, however you wanted to look at it. Miami being in the playoff was not that surprising. They were a preseason top 10 team. They beat Notre Dame in week one and really were thought to be one of the best teams in college football for the first month or so of the season. Indiana being here, and obviously we'll get to the sheer dominance of what they are, I think most of us anticipated Indiana not to drop off because of Cignetti and his track record of success. But man, if they finish this thing off next Monday, this will be looked at as one of the greatest college football teams ever. And that is just wild to imagine, considering in November of 2023, Indiana lost to Purdue 35-31 and fired their coach and hired Kirk Cignetti.
Yeah, it's, a lot's been made about Fernando Mendoza and the, you know, Disney movie that can be made about him and this program and this season. And, you know, obviously all the storylines with all the deep ties to Miami here, they're going to be, you know, talked about at length all week long. But I don't know how they're doing it necessarily, but it's been incredibly impressive what they're doing there in Bloomington. And, Kirk Cignetti, whatever you want to call him, especially if he gets this done here. Just unreal coaching job there, to say the least. And, you know, as you and I were talking about before we hit the record button here, like, I'm not going to say this is going to be a dynasty, because obviously with Ohio State, we saw how difficult it is to repeat in this tournament, but they're hammering the transfer portal now. So, like, not only do you have Cignetti and what they're doing, you know, just coaching up the kids that they have, now they're getting some legitimate top-end talent in this program, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the wild part is, you know, they're getting Nick Marsh from Michigan State, one of the highly touted prospects in the transfer portal. They're, you know, getting Josh Hoover from TCU. Not to say that Fernando Mendoza was some jabroni heading into last year, but there wasn't the level of expectations. I don't think many people, I'm sure there are some people out there who took some Mendoza Heisman early on in the process, but how about this? This is pretty wild. FBS teams to score 55 plus points and win by 30 plus points in seven different games in a season, Adam. 2025 Indiana and two teams that I bet you you're pretty familiar with. 1886 Yale and 1885 Princeton. So, I mean,
that was a really good Yale team, too.
I mean, the Bulldogs that year, no one could stop them. So, yeah. By the way, shout out to Between the Numbs on Twitter for that unique number, unique stat. So, look, if they could finish it off, and we're going to spend most of the week breaking down the game, and we'll break it down here, give us some early thoughts on it. It's historical in the sense of what we're seeing, and you know, hear the parallels to the 2019 LSU team, and you think, all right, relax. That's Joe Burrow. That's Ja'Marr Chase. Yeah, it was, but I mean, what this team has done to Alabama in the Rose Bowl and then to what they to do that to Oregon. Look, I was, you know, I'm honest. I was convinced that Oregon was going to win the game. I really did. I believed going into that. I felt like Oregon was going to win the game. And then when you've got a Pons pick six on the first play, and then Dante Moore is doing read options where he loses the ball trying to throw it and hits a backup running back in the show. I'm not making excuses. Indiana dominated that game. But let me ask you this before we dive into the game on Monday night in Miami. And relax, Indiana fans. I'm not trying to say you didn't deserve it, but there were some circumstances in that game that were a bit fortunate for Oregon to get a pick six on the first play of the game, to get the fumble inside their own 5-yard line that was seemingly just a mistake by Dante Moore. So they dominated Oregon. They would have won that game no matter what, but I do think maybe the margin was a bit inflated based off of just kind of a little bit of wackiness that unfolded in that game.
Yeah, I was actually watching the game with our own Stormy Bonantoni and her husband, Chris, and my wife was there, too, even though she didn't really care much about the game. And you're just watching, and you're like, oh, Indiana's got 35 points with, like, 260 yards or whatever it was. Oh, Indiana's got 50 points with 380 yards of offense. Like, yeah, the turnovers were definitely a really, really big factor in that game, to say the least. But I think what's really interesting, and I wrote about this, you know, writing up the opening line over at VSiN.com, it was basically seen, you know, the Indiana win over Alabama was basically seen as, well, Alabama didn't deserve to be in the playoff anyway, right? You know, they had their win, they beat Oklahoma, but they didn't deserve to be there. Indiana was just wildly better. They showed it. You know, that was just a referendum on Alabama and the fact that they shouldn't have been in the 12-team playoff. And then they blow out Oregon, and now it's, man, this Indiana team is unbeatable. They're unstoppable. They're an absolute juggernaut. All right, well, a few different things here. First of all, as you mentioned, I mean, the pick six, the turnovers, the short fields really turned that thing into a blowout very early on. Second, Oregon's coordinators, both of them, offensive and defensive, have been doing double duty, trying to work in the transfer portal at their new places while also preparing this Oregon team for playing in the national championship game. Also, or not for playing in the semifinal, sorry. Well, you know, they thought playing the national championship game. The offense looked good against James Madison, the defense didn't. And then the offense wasn't great against Texas Tech, and the defense was. Like, Oregon wasn't really a complete team. And we've had this conversation about Dan Lanning a ton. Dan Lanning is a great bully. When he plays somebody on his level or better, this kind of happens, right? Happened with Ohio State in the playoff last year. Happened here with Indiana. There were a lot of things. There's a lot of narrative-based things that you can kind of pick apart here in this one. And it makes me wonder, and I'm not eager to step in front of this Indiana team, but it makes me wonder, is 8.5 just simply too high? Like, are there just too many things, too many narratives, too many thoughts just running away about this Indiana team right now?
Well, I want to point this out because this is switching it back to the positive for what Cignetti has done since getting to Indiana. And this was something that was mentioned regarding Brian Kelly when he was at Notre Dame, which was he could win the games he was supposed to win, but never could win the big games. Well, Cignetti is obviously capable of winning the big ones because he beat Ohio State as an underdog this year, went on the road. They beat Oregon at Autzen. But since he got to Indiana, they are 24-0 straight up when they are the favorite. They don't mess up. They don't make the mistakes, right? This is a team, and this is to the credit to him, to the players that they brought in. And I think too, you know, as you opened up the podcast here talking about the portal and how well they're doing right now, Indiana doing very well in the transfer portal, and that'll be more of an off-season discussion. You know, this is a team that is mainly comprised of a lot of James Madison players. Yes, you've got Fernando Mendoza, who came in from Cal, but, you know, you've heard Pat Coogan and Fernando Mendoza talk about it, how they call themselves the Misfits, right? They were kind of not wanted by a lot of places. Like, Pat Coogan was asked to come back to Notre Dame, but he was not guaranteed a starting spot. And he said, all right, I'm going to go take whatever bag it was in Indiana. And he's been phenomenal. That was a mistake by Notre Dame to let him go. And that's what's so wild about what we're watching here is, yes, we've seen teams be busy in the portal. Look at Texas Tech. You go out and get David Bailey. David Bailey was probably the best player available in the portal, proved it, was amazing, but that team couldn't all come together. I do think there is something to be said about not only bringing in pieces via the portal, which they have done and done well, but also, I think it stems back to they built this thing or started to build this, Adam, down at James Madison, and they've just kind of carried this into Bloomington, Indiana. I don't know if this can be replicated, duplicated ever again, but it's just, it's wild to see. And like, you think back to last year, very well-coached team, but when they had to punch up, they got punched in the mouth by Ohio State, by Notre Dame. This year is completely different. When they've had to, in theory, punch up, 7-point underdogs at Oregon, they win the game, and they should have won by more. You know, 3.5-point favorites against Oregon, they win the game by 40. You know, playing Ohio State in Indianapolis, they win the game. They get the big play late on the pass. I mean, it's really impressive just to see how this team has come together when it's not. And I imagine, and I haven't looked at it yet, but I imagine this is going to like break the Bud Elliott blue chip ratio model over at CBS, because he's been on to something regarding the blue chip ratio, and this thing is just going to completely shatter it, because there aren't blue chip prospects, in air quotes, on this team, and they're not only winning, Adam, they're dominating.
Well, and, you know, something else I think has been kind of interesting, it's been talked about a lot, you know, basically since they won that game, is how old this Indiana team is.
Mm.
You know, I mean, this is a team, their average age is over 23 on this football team. And some people were comparing that to the Green Bay Packers this season in the NFL, whose average age is around 25. So that is an interesting thing, right? And Ohio State actually has gotten some older players in the transfer portal here this time around. So it seems like maybe they're trying to copycat what Indiana's doing, and maybe other teams will try to do the same thing. It's very hard in the portal because you have all these new faces, all these new guys that need to gel. If you've got young kids that aren't mature, that aren't going to, you know, do their due diligence with the playbook and, you know, get comfortable with the new program and all of that, like, those things are a very big negative when you talk about a 12-game regular season where everything's got to come together at lightning speed. And to your point, right, a lot of James Madison guys on this football team that had already been with Cignetti, but then they also targeted some older players, right? A Fernando Mendoza, older player. For Ohio State last year, when they won the title, Will Howard, an older quarterback. Julian Sain, a very young quarterback, a very talented quarterback, but he made some suspect decisions in the Big Ten championship game and in the game against Miami that definitely had a negative impact on Ohio State's chances to win. So I think what Cignetti and his staff have done here, getting a grown-ass man roster with guys that are mature, that, hell, some of them have families already that, you know, they're supporting with this NIL money and all of that. Like, it probably does make a pretty significant difference. And, you know, maybe that's just something else that we're kind of seeing here that's just sort of another piece of this Cignetti puzzle that, you know, has wound up working out really well for them.
Yeah, you look at the backfield. You've got Roman Hemby. He played 4 years at Maryland. He comes and is a fifth-year senior at Indiana, has run for over 1,000 yards. Keelon Black, 4 years at James Madison. He's in his sixth year now with Indiana. So, yeah, I'm very curious moving forward. Kirk Cignetti is such a good coach that I don't think there's going to be ever a massive drop-off. Will they have years where they aren't, you know, 15-0? Yeah, sure. I would imagine so. But yeah, it's really just impressive to see how this all has come together. You look at Omar Cooper, you know, he's been at Indiana the whole time. So he was a holdover, but he's raised his game to another level. Elijah Surratt, he started at St. Francis of Pennsylvania, an athletic program that is going to be transitioning to Division III here in the coming years. And that's where he started his career, went to James Madison. And I think what also deserves to be noted is that, you know, Kirk Cignetti and his staff, and I don't know how far it goes down, they're brilliant talent evaluators, right? I mean, this is what is so impressive, too, is that, yeah, now they have the cachet. Now people are going to want to go to Indiana because they see this dude who doesn't have emotions on the sideline and they're just beating the living shit out of everybody. But, I mean, they went out, and I know he's hurt right now and he won't be playing, but, I mean, you'd follow the MAC as close as anyone. They went out and they got Stephen Daly from Kent State, who was an embarrassment of a football program a year ago, and he comes in and he leads the team in TFLs, right? I know he got hurt. It's unfortunate. And, you know, we'll see if that ultimately hurts them here in the championship. It obviously did not affect them in the Rose Bowl or in the semifinals. But I think that's worth noting, too, is just like he is clearly a brilliant talent evaluator. I was joking with my wife while we were watching the end of the Indiana game, and Kirk Cignetti was there with his family. And I'm like, wouldn't it be crazy at 50 years old to decide to leave Alabama to go to a Division II program and say, don't worry, in about 12 years, we're going to be one win away from being national champions and I'll be making $13 million a year. I mean, this dude took the massive leap of faith. He left Nick Saban's staff to go be a Division II head coach, and now he's on the doorstep of winning a national championship. So, look, Todd McShay said it. I've said it too. This was the tweet from Todd McShay. Indiana has robbed Alabama and Oregon of its collective will in back-to-back outings with just 8 4- and 5-star recruits. Tell me how this isn't the greatest single coaching job in my lifetime, because I'm here for the fight. I agree. I mean, this is the greatest turnaround in sports history. You grew up in Ohio. I grew up following college football. Indiana is a joke, or was a joke. They were a joke. They were a laughingstock. And now they're a juggernaut in 2 years. I mean, this turnaround is just unbelievable.
Well, and I'm really curious to see now, just sort of big picture, not related to, you know, the betting aspects of this game or anything like that, but it took 35 years for Kurt Cignetti to become a Division I head football coach. He was almost 60 at the time that it happened, right? And, you know, now we have a lot of older coaches, kind of, you know, the legacy coaches stepping aside because they don't care for the transfer portal and stuff like that. But, like, all these teams are trying to hire these hot young coordinators and, you know, all these other different types of things, trying to be more innovative, trying to, you know, completely reinvent the wheel on offense and do all these different disguised schemes on defense and all that kind of thing. And it's like, here you just have a football lifer who was a coach, you know, as a graduate assistant at Pitt in 83, 84, 35 years later, he's the head coach at James Madison. And then now, you know, within what, 6-7 years, he's playing for a national championship. Like, do we see a paradigm shift in terms of hiring college football coaches at some point where it does become like the Joey McGuire's of the world, where, you know, he was just a longtime assistant, a killer in the recruiting world, gets himself a head coaching job at Texas Tech. You surround him with really good coordinators and boom, all of a sudden you're in the college football playoff. Is this something that maybe we start to see, you know, where we maybe have some of these older guys that take over these middling, to put it nicely, programs and, you know, all of a sudden take them to these new standards, these new heights? I don't know. I'm really curious to see, because if you think about the NFL, right, and how Sean McVay came in and then everyone became a copycat league, you know, trying to take his coordinators, his assistants, his analysts, all these different types of things, right? Does college football eventually follow suit now where you've got what Cignetti has done, where, as you said, this is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this, right? So do we start to see athletic departments maybe go in a different direction? It's just, it's remarkable to think of the waterfall effect that this could have in college football and maybe college athletics in general.
Well, and you got to give credit to Indiana, and it helps when you have a guy like Mark Cuban who is helping fund this athletic department, or in the NIL, however it is, because, you know, not only did they find, let's call it what it is, a diamond in the rough and getting Kirk Cignetti to come from James Madison, they have now ensured that he's not going to leave. Now, if he leaves for the NFL, I guess there's nothing you could do about it. But, you know, Penn State wanted him. Who wouldn't want him? And they ponied up and they spent the cash. And, you know, for Kirk Cignetti to be in a spot where he believes they can go out and spend the money that they need to spend, you know, I mean, it's just you know, who knows where this program is in the coming years. But as long as that dude's on the sideline, I don't see them dropping off anytime in the near future. We will get into this game here in just a moment. But, you know, you're an elite talent evaluator when you go and you poach someone from the Hawaii special teams. Now, Kansei Matsuzawa, he's going on to the NFL, but Billy Gowers, the punter, he will be headed to Indiana. So that was a big loss for our beloved Rainbow Warriors, big gain for the Hoosiers. But speaking of Kansei Matsuzawa, the Lou Groza finalist, he has taken his precision and power to your closet with the Tokyo Toe apparel, bold design, premium comfort, and 100% fan energy. Whether you're tailgating or tuned in, represent greatness. Visit tokyotoe.com. That's tokyotoe.com and wear what winners wear. Shout out to the Hawaii basketball program with a buzzer beater win over UC Irvine late on Saturday night. So a 67-66 win there. I know Coach Iran Ganat, who was on VSiN Primetime when we were out in Honolulu, was pretty pumped about that win over the Anteaters. So shout out to Hawaii basketball. By the way, I have to mention this, and I know it's been said probably 1,000 times on social media, but what bizarro world are we living in where Indiana is 15-0 in football and on the doorstep of winning the title. And Nebraska basketball has the longest winning streak in the sport. They've won 20 in a row. It all started with the crown, Adam Burke. And then down 15 at Assembly Hall on Saturday, they come back and they win. So Nebraska basketball and Indiana football, 2026. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely insane. And by the way, with my Ohio roots, shout out to the Miami Redhawks.
Yeah.
17-0, shooting 39% from three on the season. The MAC is always wide open. So
they were underdogs on Friday night, Adam, and they took care of business.
Yeah, easily too. I mean, they won by two touchdowns against the Toledo team. It's usually pretty good. So I don't see they got a tough road game coming up on January 20th against Kent State, but a couple blowouts probably prior to that. But it's just, I'll tell you what, man, the transfer portal, like if you need examples of what the transfer portal has done to college athletics, like just look at some of these teams that are standing out now that really never did, whether it's football, basketball, or something else.
Former Xavier coach Travis Steele in his fourth year at Miami, Ohio. Last basketball note here, because I'm having fun with it. Another one of the unbeatens in college basketball. We're down to five after Michigan was stunned by Wisconsin over the weekend. How about Mark Byington and Vanderbilt at the same time 2 years ago, Adam, on the same campus in Harrisonburg, Virginia? Kirk Cignetti was coaching the football program, and Mark Byington was the head coach of the basketball program, and both are now undefeated and having banner seasons at their respective institutions.
Yeah, it's impressive, man. You know, some of these programs have definitely been springboards for coaches. You think about Troy, you know, they've had a couple of really good coaches that, you know, have gone on to do some good things. But it makes you think, right? You know, thinking ahead to next season, like, how much am I going to like UCLA with Bob Chesney?
Sure.
And, you know, just kind of looking at, they're not going to be in the college football playoff, I would assume. But, you know, thinking about their win total and stuff like that, like, some of these athletic departments just know how to find coaching talent, and clearly James Madison being one of them.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So let's get into the game. And actually, before we get into the game, it is an amazing time of year. And we still, as we record, have one more game of wild card weekend. We really only had one dud on wild card weekend. And it started Thursday night with that Ole Miss Miami craziness down in Glendale, which we will obviously get to because Miami does exist. They are playing for the national championship as well. And hint, hint, might be thinking about maybe a team that's getting overlooked a little bit. But what we got going on at the website right now, Adam?
Well, hopefully our team's not getting overlooked over at VSiN.com, because I'll tell you what, man, people may think that it's slowing down. You know, now that we've got just the four football games this weekend for the NFL, and then two, and then the Super Bowl, and, you know, just the national championship. But it's definitely college basketball season over at VSiN.com. We got three articles Monday through Friday, two of them on Saturday, one of them on Sunday, with Greg Peterson going 7 days a week with his college basketball best bets. My article is Monday through Saturday. Tyler Shoemaker's projections Monday through Friday. A lot of people are going to be getting into the college basketball market right now that haven't paid an ounce of attention to it. And that's a tough thing to do when you go into a market with that many teams, that many games, trying to figure things out on the fly. So use us over at VSiN.com as your help. NBA season, of course, has been going on. NHL season two. Golf fires back up this week, I believe, or next week with the Sony Open. The Australian Open for tennis. Zachary Cohen, my senior editor, is going to be doing a lot with that. We're a month away from NASCAR getting going again. Big UFC event coming up here at the end of the month. So we cover all that stuff over at VSiN.com. And right now we got our big game 60 special, $60 off of an annual subscription. Makes it $15 a month to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. I'm biased. I know you're biased a little bit too, Tim. It's well worth your money for $15 a month. What's that, 50 cents a day to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. So take advantage of that big game 60 special that we got going on right now.
Look, I had the team of CoinHop on VSiN on the weekend morning line on Saturday, the team that won Circa Millions, and they said they should, they're looking into getting a VSiN Pro subscription too. I mean, why wouldn't you? So they're
right. They should have already had one. They would
using
have
part of that
done
$1 million to to get a VSiN Pro subscription. You don't need $1 million to get a VSiN Pro subscription. Oh, by the way, while we're sitting here, Indiana just got Shaz Preston, a two-lane transfer, 43 catches, 723 yards, and 4 touchdowns. So, you know, just while we're sitting here, another commit for the Cignetti train. It is an unstoppable force right now. But we thought Michigan basketball was an unstoppable force, and apparently Wisconsin was able to knock them off. Well, all that being said, we have a game on Monday night, a week from Monday. It will be inside Hard Rock Stadium. Miami will be wearing their road uniforms. They will be the road team in this game. And before we dive into the X's and O's, and watching that game on Friday night in Atlanta, and I know our guy Wes Reynolds was there, and he'll be on later this week. Holy smokes. Did the entire Alumni Association of Indiana make their way to Atlanta? Because that stadium, did it even have, outside of the artificial grass, Adam, was there green inside that stadium? It looked like it was an Indiana home game. So Miami's going to have plenty of presence, but there will be a boatload of Indiana fans inside Hard Rock Stadium. I can guarantee it.
Well, look, you got a couple of factors in play here, right? You got snowbirds that, you know, are going down to the warm weather climates, leaving the Great Lakes, Midwest area, the Rust Belt, because, I mean, take one look at the weather forecast and you'll see why. But also, I mean, those people had, what, several decades worth of money stored up to spend on the football team. So, you know, I guess it makes a lot of sense.
I mean, it's not like the basketball team has been making deep runs, too. So let's, you know, I know it's a basketball school, but that being said, they've had that money stored up. Maybe that's why Wes has been able to make the rounds all the way through this.
I mean, look, man, I'm looking at the, like, it's supposed to be, I'm just looking at Cleveland because it's in my bookmark since I still, you know, I talk to my parents every day and everything. Sunday, high of 21. Like, why the hell would you want to be there when you could be in Miami instead? Because I'm sure Bloomington's not much warmer.
Yeah. And, hey, man, I mean, just go down now, right? Just
yeah, right?
Why not?
Yeah.
Just go to the beach. Just hang out, you know, just take it all in. But, you know, I want to point out something about the Miami game. And it felt like it was, I know, you know, we got a tweet during VSiN primetime because we were on the air at the time of the game. And someone kind of alluded to the fact that, hey, maybe we need to ease off of Cristobal. Maybe he's grown out of the mistakes. And I'm not saying they were his mistakes, but that game really should not have been as close as it was. I mean, Miami had the ball for over 40 minutes in that game. You know, they just, it felt like they could not put him away. They were 11 of 19 on third downs, 2 of 2 on fourth downs. And ultimately, they just kind of kept that door open. That said, they made the big play when they needed to. I thought the play design on Carson Beck's scramble was a really nice play design. Everyone shifted to one side and the C parted and he had the awareness to run into the end zone. So the number's now 8.5, and we'll get into betting splits and all of that. I do think this number is a bit high. And the question you have to ask yourself is, you already pointed it out, are you really ready to get in front of the Cignetti train here? Because Miami was a 9.5-point underdog against Ohio State, and now they're an 8.5-point underdog on their home turf against Indiana. It does feel like this number is elevated, but the question once again is, do you want to get in front of Indiana here?
Well, look, I mean, I think something that's not being talked about enough, right? Because we're talking about Indiana's dominance. You know, we just sort of inherently put a lot of extra value on things that are a little bit surprising, right? That are kind of eye-popping, that are eye-catching, right? When you win a game in the fashion that Indiana did, it's impressive, right? Especially because that is a college football playoff team, you know, in Oregon, a team that was highly ranked throughout the course of the season. To get blown out on that kind of stage, yeah, it's going to carry a lot of weight. But we're not talking enough about what Miami has done in this college football playoff. They completely shut down Texas A&M. They completely shut down Ohio State. And then they won in a much different style of game against Ole Miss. And I think there's something to be said about that, right? They scored 31 points. They had to, you know, in order to win this football game. But we saw the offense show up a little bit. And look, I played the over in this game, and you could say maybe it got a little bit lucky to get there because the fourth quarter was just so bonkers and so back and forth. But Ole Miss was running out Trinidad Chambliss, a player that Miami had not seen to this point during the regular season or in the college football playoff. Julian Sain is not that guy. Marcel Reed is not that guy. And I expected Ole Miss to be able to move the football to find some success, and they did. But you know what? Miami found a way again. And that's just what this team has done in their three playoff games here. And like I said, with Indiana blowing out Alabama, Alabama wasn't really a top 10 team, right? I mean, we all kind of talked about that going into the playoff. Oregon, I don't really know how good they were. I think they're very, very talented, certainly, but I don't know how good they were, especially with two coordinators that, as I mentioned earlier, doing double duty, probably not as prepared for the game. I mean, Ryan Day didn't think Brian Hartline was prepared enough for the game, so he took play calling duties away from him. Like, these things matter, right? Miami has all the continuity in the world. Cristobal is there. Dawson's not going anywhere. Heatherman's not going anywhere. Beck is a very experienced guy at the position. Like, there's a lot of reasons, I think, to like Miami at +8.5 here in this game. The look-ahead line was 5.5. You don't see a three-point line adjustment with all the data points, all the information that we have. I don't know that I want to bet against Kurt Cignetti. And it's to me, it's as simple as that. I'm probably going to take Miami. The numbers are probably going to push me in Miami's direction. I've seen all three of Miami's playoff games. I've been very impressed with how versatile they've been, how flexible they've been with their style of play. I won't be shocked if they lose by three touchdowns. It just won't surprise me.
You know, it's funny. I was talking about the game, just kind of early thoughts on Saturday on VSiN, and I got a tweet, and I want to try to find it here because it made me laugh because of, you know, where we're at right now with this Indiana team, where it's just to the point where no one thinks this team can be beat. And in 2019, they were right, right? I bet Clemson in that national championship in 2019, you know, 2020 of January, did not work out all that well. Now, it was competitive for a little bit until it wasn't, and ultimately Joe Burrow and company were able to put it away 42-25. But, man, it is, it's funny to see how we're looking at this team right now. Here it is, loading up on alt spread, Indiana -10. Enough of this pathetic wise guy shit. Miami will not score 20 points. IU will score at least 32. It's possible. Look, they've been that impressive. And you mentioned the coordinators. Shannon Dawson, the offensive coordinator for Miami, I think is really damn good at his job. And Bryant Haynes, the defensive coordinator in Indiana, also really damn good at his job. They've got extra time to prepare, right? Both these teams have, you know, 10 days to get ready for this game. I think it's going to be, and I thought Indiana and Oregon was going to be a war, and I was inaccurate. I think this is going to be another war. And I think when you think about the, you know, what Miami kind of prides themselves on this year, it's their lines, right? Offensive line, defensive line. And I will say, and it wasn't sustained, but if you think back, Adam, to how the Oregon-Indiana game started, and not finished, but started, Oregon throws the pick six, and then the next drive, they go 14 plays, 75 yards. They had some push, and they were able to score a touchdown. Indiana obviously responded with their own touchdown drive, and then shortly thereafter, things kind of fell apart with the fumble inside their own five-yard line, and things go haywire. And once, look, I want to point this out. Like, Bill Conley, SP Plus, adjusted margin was 28. It wasn't like it was a fluky 34-point win. I don't think there's such thing as a fluky 34-point win, but I really like this Miami team. And I, you know, if they're able to grind it out with Mark Fletcher getting chunk yards and Carson Beck, look, I ended up betting, I was texting with Wyatt, our producer, about this. I ended up betting over rushing yards for Carson Beck. I was right and wrong. I lost the bet, but he did run, right? He ran a couple of times. Now, he had a backwards pass that was a fumble. He got sacked a couple of times. He had an intentional grounding, so the prop didn't get there. But Carson Beck has actually shown the willingness to run so far in this postseason to extend some drives. And, you know, you look at what Indiana did against Ole Miss, they had the ball for 41 minutes. Like, they're going to want to grind this thing out. And I think Indiana's going to want to do something similar, even though I would say Indiana's a bit more explosive. So that's going to be the interesting kind of chess match here, Adam, for this game, is who gets to dictate how this game plays out, and will Miami have some of those long, sustained drives that they had in the game against Ohio State and against Ole Miss as well?
Well, and something else I think is kind of interesting to discuss here is, you know, it's great to blow a team out, right? I mean, it's very nice to just kind of coast to a victory like Indiana did, you know, in their first two playoff games. But what if this one is close in the fourth quarter? Because in the second half of the Big Ten championship game, I would argue Ohio State was the better team. And Ryan Day fucked up twice. You know, the turnover on downs and the missed field goal. And, like, his game management was just pathetic. And Ohio State moving at a snail's pace definitely doesn't help them. Because, you know, maybe they weren't so efficient at scoring as they thought they were. But what if this game is close, right? And you do have this Miami team that is very athletic, that is capable of some kind of explosive play, whether it's on offense or defense. What if this is a one-score game in the fourth quarter? Indiana hasn't played a whole lot of those in the last 2 years, you know, because they've blown out. Segeni doesn't take his foot off the gas, which I appreciate. I love that. Look, it's not my job to stop my team. It's your job to stop my team. So he's very good at the bully role. It inflates their metrics a little bit, to be sure. But look, I mean, you could make a case they should have lost to Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. They were Omar Cooper's toenails away from losing to Penn State, a very watered-down Penn State team in a close game. Like, I think it's a fair question to ask, and it's kind of a narrative thing, right? And it's definitely based in hypotheticals because, I mean, who knows if this is a close game? And maybe Indiana just does execute. They're very detail-oriented. They've been, you know, so good at so many different things over the last couple of seasons. But, like, if this is close, right? I mean, I think it adds a pretty high degree of variability to how this game plays out in the fourth quarter. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Maybe this is a good game from a live betting standpoint. But I kind of want to see Indiana in a close game, too. Maybe it doesn't happen. Maybe they just, you know, put an exclamation point on one of the most impressive seasons we've ever seen. But if this is a close game, Miami's been in some wars here. So maybe that's something that does kind of benefit the Hurricanes a little bit.
It does kind of, it's like the opposite of TCU and Georgia. And when that number came out, you heard this number is disrespectful. You know, TCU just keeps finding ways to win, and Georgia wins the game 65-7. I'm not saying Indiana can't blow them out, and I'm not saying that Carson Beck, remember, he had a bad turnover, right? He forced one, gets deflected in the air, Ole Miss picks it off. And Miami, let's remember this, penalties. And they got lucky on one of the early drives in the game. They hit Trinidad Chambliss out of bounds and it didn't get called, but they had some dumb penalties. That's the thing. If you're going to bet Miami, which I think ultimately I'll get there and we'll discuss that as the week goes on, you got to hope that they don't play like they did against Ole Miss, making mistakes, because if you make mistakes against Indiana, you're screwed. Like, Indiana, that's one thing, one of the many things that you have to give them credit for, Adam. They don't make mistakes. This team, you mentioned it, they're veteran. They've got fifth-year seniors, sixth-year seniors. They've got just smart adults, and they've got a really good coaching staff. And I still go back to the Rose Bowl when Kalen DeBoer, you know, brings the punt team out, and then he pulls them off, and Cignetti's just standing on the sideline like, come on, dude. Like, you're not going to get me on this shit. Like, I'm too smart for this. So Miami, I think if you look at pound-for-pound talent, probably the more talented roster, but this Indiana team is an elite team, and they have some elite players as well, and more than likely the number one overall pick in Fernando Mendoza. So Miami can't make mistakes. If you go out there and you do what you did against Louisville, good night. This is an absolute blowout a week from today.
Yeah, and to your point, I think it's a really excellent point that you made. If you look at average penalty yardage here throughout the course of the season, Indiana second in the nation, 26.9. The only team better, Army, which is not surprising at all, being a service academy. Miami about 57 yards in penalties per game. So about a 30-yard difference in penalties. And that's another thing, right? Another wild card here in this game. How is this game officiated? I mean, do they let these kids decide it for themselves, because you know there's going to be a ton of physicality on the outside. There's going to be a lot of 50-50 balls probably in terms of, you know, whether it's going to be pass interference or not. Like, how is this game officiated? I think makes a pretty big difference, because Indiana is exceptionally physical,
mm-hmm.
but in a pretty clean way. Miami's pretty physical in kind of the Miami way of it, can be borderline at times. Yeah. So I'm curious to see that too, and how that plays out, and if that has a significant impact on the game.
Our buddy the Bear tweeted this out prior to the Fiesta Bowl. He said Miami committed 4 penalties in the first 2 college football playoff games, committed 3 in the first quarter, talking about the Fiesta Bowl, 2 extremely costly on the last drive. But this was the number I was trying to find regarding Miami's win over Ole Miss. Miami is the only FBS or NFL team in the last 20 years hold the ball for 40 minutes, amass 400 yards of offense, convert 10 third downs, convert multiple fourth downs, and have 4 drives of 13 plays or more, all in the same game, regular season or postseason. So, I don't know. Maybe they got their silliness out of them against Ole Miss. And if they play like that, hard to imagine that this game is a blowout. So, I'm excited for it, man. Like, I know it's unique. It's the number 10 seed versus the number 1 seed. But, you know, this isn't, I don't know, I was going to say Butler making the championship, but maybe it is kind of like Butler making the championship and they almost beat Duke on a half-court shot. This is going to be a game, if Miami can avoid turnovers and mistakes. I think this is a very competitive game at Hard Rock Stadium next week.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, like, it's a big if, right? And people are going to go, well, yeah, you know, if you take care of the football and avoid mistakes, yeah, you should be in the game. But we know that Indiana's probably not going to turn the ball over and probably not going to have those back-breaking penalties or any of those significant mistakes, because Cincinnati teams just don't do that. So it's going to be up to Cristobal. It's going to be up to Heatherton and you know, Heatherman and those guys, you know, on that coaching staff from Miami, kind of saying, look, guys, like, yeah, you got to go all out, but at the same time, you got to be really, really smart and hope that that message resonates, because you know what? With a team of 23 and 24-year-old guys, they probably are going to play smarter. They probably are going to play more discipline. And so that's something that Miami's going to have to rein in here a little bit. And look, I mean, you know, just to kind of continue to talk a little bit more about the qualitative nature of this handicap, right? You're Miami. You're playing at home, and your fan base is probably going to be outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's going to piss you off. That's a chip on your shoulder. That's a, you know, that's sort of one of those things that can cause you to get a little bit reckless early on in the game. And I think if you're, you know, Shannon Dawson specifically, like, you want to try to play from in front in the first half of this game and kind of put a little bit of pressure on Indiana to play in a situation that they haven't really been in. And so that's going to, you know, your team's going to have to be disciplined and locked up in order to have any hope of doing that, because you don't want it to come from behind. If you have to come from behind, you're in trouble here. So there's so many intangibles in this game, let alone the statistical comparisons and all of that. And look, I mean, this is college football's Super Bowl, so it's the only game. We have a ton of time to talk about this and overanalyze the hell out of it. You're going to hear so many different things here. So, you know, for our listeners, for our audience, whether it's listening to this show or listening to everything else, like, you're going to have so much noise and so many different inputs from people and all of that. You can talk yourself into circles in this game. So, you know, just try to think as you're listening to people or as you're reading things, what you want to prioritize in this football game so that you can decide what the best bet is that you want to make on it.
Fernando Mendoza, the numbers haven't been eye-popping from a gaudiness, if you will, yardage-wise. The efficiency from Mendoza is stupid. 8 touchdowns, 5 incompletions so far in this postseason. And some of the throws he made against Oregon, I think Oregon played perfect defense. It was just his receivers are making plays. He's pinpoint accurate, and he's slippery, man. Like, he, when Bain and Mesidor and those dudes are coming after him, he just kind of finds ways to slip through the cracks, if you will. So I think that's going to be a really fun one. I thought Chambliss versus that defense was going to be fun, and I anticipate this to be as well. It's super early. obviously, we still got plenty more time to break this down, but I do want to pass across this. I'm going to tweet out the clip here in just a little bit at one Tim Murray. Thomas Gable from the Borgata in Atlantic City came on my Saturday show, Adam, and he said, early money, all on Indiana. You pointed it out. Look ahead, 5.5 at the time, bumped it up to 7.5. And then using our betting splits over at VSiN.com, do with it what you will. Still plenty more action to come in. But right now, not a surprise, every bet seems to be coming in on Indiana. 84% of bets, 88% of handle. John Ewing over at BetMGM reporting similar. 86% of bets, 88% of money on Indiana. So, look, it's going to be one-sided, no doubt. But public doesn't always go winless, right? They find ways to win. They won in the game against Oregon, right? The public was on Indiana in that one. So we'll see. But yeah, this will definitely be, I don't want to say pros versus Joes, because I imagine there'll be some pros that are going to just say, I'm not getting in front of the Cignetti train. Maybe their numbers can't get there, but this is going to be a very publicly bet side in the national championship. And I think ultimately, when you hear from different odds makers, Adam, throughout the week, next Monday, whatever it may be, they're going to be massive Miami fans heading into that game a week from today.
Yeah, for sure. And something I think is important to put into context here, that's not really a ton of public money at this point in time, because the public wants to have their bankrolls liquid. They want to be playing NBA, college basketball, whatever else, right? They're going to bet the day before the game or the day of the game. So you are seeing some people initially kind of jumping in here on the Indiana side. Maybe it's a numbers grab, just expecting this line to go up, and it already has. So maybe that's part of the equation. You know, usually the statistical modeling crowd is what jumps in very early. People that have yards per play models, adjusted and weighted, stuff like that, they tend to jump in early on with overnight lines, you know, opening numbers, stuff like that. So maybe they are kind of coming in on the Indiana side for this one as well. But, you know, the avalanche of public money is going to show up Sunday, Monday. You know, people want to be liquid for the NFL games this weekend and all of that. So that is some, you know, initial sharper money, whether it's true or whether they're just kind of trying to massage this number a little bit, as betting limits are still a little bit lower than what they will be, you know, 24, 48 hours before kickoff. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, just the expectation that this line is going to go north, then the question will become, do we see a point of resistance where Miami money comes in and kind of stops that flow of Hoosier money? That's what we'll have to wait and see. And frankly, I don't know if we'll see that until the weekend, if we see it at all.
Well, and I'll say this, last thought for me. If you're looking to bet Miami, which it sounds like you and I are more on that side, I don't think there's a real rush, right?
No.
You just saw this number go to 8.5. I doubt it would get to 10, but why not wait? Just, you got a week. It's not like there's going to be massive resistance coming in on the Miami side here. So I think you could take your time and, you know, shout out to a Jeremiah, a buddy of mine, and I mentioned it prior to the announcement of the bracket. Circa had Miami at 200-1 to win the title the week of the championship, conference championship games, and now they're in the national championship game. So if you have that 200-1 ticket or something lofty like that, you're feeling pretty good right now about heading into this game. But yeah,
I was going to mention real quick here too. Speaking of that, in our college football playoff betting guide, Jensen Lewis, one of the hosts of VSiN by the Books, our morning show, had the championship exacta of Miami versus Indiana.
Nice.
So shout out to him for that as well.
Oh boy, Jensen, big fan of Jensen and that program. Him and Super Dave, onto another off season without the Cowboys in the playoffs. What a shocker down there. But hey, I'm sure they'll win this offseason, Dave. Don't worry about it. I will take a little jab at Dave here, because Dave, I believe, was one of the first people to text me when Notre Dame got left out of the playoff. And it was not a fun, like, it's okay. It was like, haha, see, I told you so. Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, went on VSiN by the Books and started gloating about how he was going to win the contest, the fantasy draft that we do over at VSiN, and Dak Prescott in week 18 ended up getting 70 passing yards and did not have the most passing yards to lead the season. So maybe a little bit of a mush, maybe a little bit of a maybe a little bit of karma, if you will, Super Dave. So take that, Super Dave. Shout out to VSiN Primetime finishing 2-3, and Patrick Maher with an assist, I believe, from Dustin Sweetelson to have Jonathan Taylor to lead the NFL in rushing touchdowns. But had to get a little jab on my guy, Super Dave, as my Irish, just like his Cowboys, did not make the postseason this year.
I mean, I don't know how old you are, Tim.
38.
But 38. Okay. All right. So basically what you're saying is that you have not been alive for a Mets World Series, which is another one of Dave's teams.
Mets World Series win.
Yes, Mets World Series win. Yeah, well, that's all that matters, right? Going to the World Series and losing doesn't mean shit. But you got your Nationals title. Did you not?
Got my Nats title. Make got sure my you can, Caps title.
Your Caps title? Yeah, make sure you rub that in with Dave, too.
I'm not going
to. I was a couple weeks old when they won the World Series.
I will say I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I recall when I was 15 months old, Notre Dame beating West Virginia in the national title. So still
you
waiting
probably
for
remember
that one.
It. I'm sure you remember it. It's fine.
Well, I didn't have a roast of Dave Ross on the rundown today, but hey, when you can have some playful jabs at your friends, you like to do it. Hey, speaking of friends, I would consider all of you our friends here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast family. A big shout out to you guys as we have eclipsed over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So much appreciated to you guys. That was kind of a goal that me and Wyatt, our producer, were hoping to get to. And we got there before the end of the season. So much appreciated to you guys. We will have a wrap-up pod of sorts next week. We'll talk about what we're planning on to do this offseason. But Adam, it's been a fun season. We'll talk next week, if you're willing. Come on, just kind of BS about the championship game. And we'll have one kind of final send-off before we hit the off season and get ready for the 2026 college football season. Before we know it, we'll be previewing Hawaii Stanford in week 0.
Oh, there you go. Looking forward to that one. By the way, for those who haven't subscribed yet, our producer Wyatt Tomchek is a very big Packers fan. So if you can find it in your heart after what happened there during the wildcard weekend to subscribe and maybe, you know, kind of soften the blow for him a little bit, I would encourage you. I know most of us are cold, dead, and heartless in the sports fandom and sports betting worlds, but if you can find a little bit there in your heart to subscribe to the show in honor of Wyatt, who's still licking his wounds from that Packers loss, please do so.
Yeah, he was hoping that John Harbaugh or Kevin Stefanski would be headed to Green Bay. Unfortunately, you're going to be keeping old Matty LaFleur, so that looks like the way it'll be. All right, that's going to do it. We've kind of gone off the rails as we tend to do. But Adam, please remind the folks, how much content and preview will we have over the next week for the national title?
Well, there'll be a lot, Tim. No, there'll be a lot over at VSiN.com. There's always a lot over at VSiN.com. You know, looking forward to the national championship game. Looking forward to, look, I'll say this real quickly here. I mean, 2025 was a massive year for us. You know, new benchmarks in terms of our KPIs, new benchmarks in terms of users, traffic, subscribers. It was a massive year for us on the digital side at VSiN.com. And we expect 2026 to be even better. So that means that we also have to continue to elevate what it is that we're doing, and we will do that for you. So that Big Game 60 special, annual subscription, $180, $15 a month. Jump on that over at VSiN.com. But even if not, just come check us out, see what we have to offer. And, you know, again, we just continue to grow. We continue to get stronger and stronger. Our content gets distributed a whole lot more. Run over 400 radio stations with our broadcast programming. So there's a lot of momentum here. And it's definitely something that I think if you're interested in sports betting and getting better at the craft, you know, take advantage of everything that we do at VSiN, whether it's at the website or what you and your team and everybody else does on air.
Well, and I'll just remind folks, too, we'll remind you all week, if you're looking for a little side screen or some alternate discussion during the national championship. Matt Newman's, myself, will be on the air, VSiN primetime, during the national championship, SiriusXM 158, YouTube TV, all of those radio stations that Adam alluded to, the VSiN Watch app. So if you're looking for, there's about a billion of them, alternate ways to watch the game. We'll be on the air looking at live betting angles as well. But much more to come this week. Our normal cast of characters, Wes Reynolds, who, I mean, at this point, did he walk home from Atlanta? I mean, he might as well just ran. I mean, good Lord, what a run it has been for Wes and his Hoosiers. We will check in with Brett Ciancia, Matt Newmans, maybe some other guests. We'll see how it all filters out here this week. But stick with us. We will have plenty of analysis, breakdowns, best bets, all of that. Maybe we'll get a prop guy on to talk some props and how to attack it, because there's so many ways we're going to bet this game. So for Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, the producers of this podcast. Once again, please rate, review, and subscribe. And once, as Adam let you know, Wyatt's a little down right now. So if we could get a five-star review for the Packer fan, that would be nice. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We'll be right back.